Good morning and welcome back to Nachyomi. Today we're going to be learning Divrei Hayomim Aleph Perek Yud Ches, the 18th chapter of the book of Divrei Hayomim 1. There are 17 psukim in this perek, and it's really about the conquests of David HaMelech. The parallel perek in Tanakh is Shmuel Beis Perek Ches. We're going to hear about some of the conquests that David HaMelech makes and the expansion of the borders of Israel in all directions. In Pasuk Aleph, we hear about the subduing of the Philistines, how David HaMelech captures Gat, which is one of the prime cities of Venoseha, from the Philistines, and he humbles them. It should be noted that originally when David HaMelech was fleeing from Shaul, his father-in-law, he found refuge when going to the Philistines and aligned himself with Achish, the king of Gat, which is fascinating in the sense symbolically that this victory is important to show that ultimately his allegiances do not lie with them. Malbim points out that the flow of this perek from the previous perek is to be understood in the following way. David HaMelech has just been denied the possibility of making the Beis HaMikdash. And as we saw, there's an innuendo, whether it be here or only later on in his life, that part of it is because of the amount of wars that he's been involved with, and the amount of bloodshed. So if that's his role, if his role is conquest, then he's going to continue with that, and that's what we see over here. So he's now focusing his energy on what his goals really are. It should be noted that there are a number of details which are additional there in Shmuel Beis Perek Ches, and also some details which are here. So one example of that is that when describing the conquest of the Philistines, it describes that he captured Meseg Ha'ama. Over there, it doesn't say this in Divrei Hayomim. What does that mean? So Pirkei de Rabbi Eliezer, the early Medrash, says it was the symbol of the covenant that Avraham Avinu made with the Philistines, that David HaMelech was, in a certain sense, neutralizing. Or the Mitzvah says it could mean the head of the city. It could mean some sort of way of taking back the city. Anyways, nonetheless, that's the first pasuk. Then we hear about the conquest of Aram and Moab, or first Moab and then Aram, in Psukim Beis to Ches. We hear about how he conquers Moab. Moab is a nation to the southeast of the land of Israel, just across from where the Dead Sea is. And he makes them Nosei Mincha, which means they now have to pay homage to Israel. He conquers Hadad Ezer, who's the king of Tzova, which is Tzova is Aleppo, and he also places emissaries across the Aver Anar Pras, the Euphrates River. We hear about many of the battles involving tens of thousands of people. He captures these chariots and he hamstrings the horses, making them unusable for war. Then he goes to Aram Damasek, which is Damascus, and because of the king of Damascus comes to help the king of Aleppo, ultimately David HaMelech conquers both of them. And we hear how he puts his representatives there, and they both had to pay taxes and homage to David HaMelech. And the one of the refrains in this perek is Vayosha Hashem leDavid b'chol asher alach. Wherever David HaMelech went, Hashem helped him out. And we hear a little bit further about this, how ultimately he brings the Shiltei HaZahav, which could mean quivers or shields of gold, which he brings from these areas, and he brings them back to Yerushalayim. And we hear also about the copper, which he brings back, a large amount of copper, which is brought to Yerushalayim, which is ultimately used by Shlomo to make the Yam, which is going to be this large basin for as used to be used as a mikveh. And the Amudim are these going to be the pillars of the Beis HaMikdash. Few basic questions over here. If David HaMelech captures all these chariots and horses, why does he hamstring them? Surely he should co-opt them. You know, if you go and visit the Latrun Tank Museum in Israel today, you will see that among the many tanks on display are some of them are captured Russian tanks from the Arab armies. So when you capture something of great expense and technological development, you co-opt it, you don't destroy it. So there's a number of answers to suggest this. This is also done in the times of Yahushua, when Yahushua does the same thing to the horses. Rabbi Chaim Angel, one of my teachers, points out that it could be an expression of just not knowing how to deal with that technology and so on, so just trying to destroy the equipment rather than having it utilized by others. Rav Yigal Ariel points out that the Torah tells us that kings should not have too many horses. Whether this is an idea of a problem of having pleasure horses, the Rambam says, or the Ramban, because it leads to a lack of trust in Hashem. Could be over here that what David HaMelech is trying to avoid is that issue of not having too many horses, so that's why he hamstrings the horses as well. A third possibility exists, just a fascinating Gemara in Avodah Zarah, Daf Yud Gimel, is that it describes a complex situation where a Jew does not want to be involved in being mahane, giving benefit to Avodah Zarah. And the Gemara says that a person who's trading in a shuk shel ovdei kochavim, which means a pagan marketplace, not a secular marketplace, but a pagan marketplace, the Gemara says that that all the things they use, behemot te'aker, the animals should be hamstringed, peros ksusa kelim yirkavu, their merchandise should rot, ma'os ha'klimat chos yolichem liyam ha'melach, and you should throw their vessels into the Dead Sea, meaning to say that the benefit they got should not be used. The Gemara asks, why should we hurt the animals? So the Gemara quotes the pasuk in Yoshua, Perek Yud Aleph, where they hamstring the animals. So maybe there's an element over here where David HaMelech felt that in this particular region they were serving the animals. The animals are part of their deification, so that's why he was destroying them. You'll notice that as opposed to Sefer Shmuel Beis, in this section we hear that he uses the copper to make these specific items in the Beis HaMikdash, the Yam Shel Shlomo and the Amudim. That's going to be Yochin and Boaz, the two pillars on the right and the left of the entrance of the Heichal. Rashi explains that, again, this is David Melech's response to his denial to make the Mikdash. Hashem says, you're not going to build the Beis HaMikdash, but you're going to have a son who will. So David Melech says, well, I'll focus my energies and I'll get all the material necessary for my son to be able to do that. That's David Melech. He didn't give up. He didn't throw in the towel. He didn't get angry and frustrated and say, God has rejected me. But what he does is he says, I have a different role. I'm going to use that role and be able to do it to the very best of my ability. That's what a real leader is. Then we hear from Pesukim Tes to Yud, we hear about other kings. So we hear about To'u, or is To'i in Sefer Shmuel, same person, who is the king of Hamas. He came to make peace with David HaMelech, and David HaMelech made him pay a certain amount of homage. He didn't want to fight with David HaMelech, and David HaMelech sanctified all these vessels and gave them to, and brought them to Yerushalayim. And then we hear about the conquest of Edom. Edom is also a bordering country of Israel, again southeast, further south than Moab, and he conquers them as well. We hear about this, and he puts his representatives there as well. And again, we hear the refrain, "Vayosha Hashem es David b'chol asher alach." Wherever David HaMelech went, he was saved and successful by Hashem. And finally, the last few psukim in the perek, Yud Dalet to Yud Zayin, we hear about how David HaMelech was the king al kol Yisrael, vayhi osem mishpat utzdakah l'chol amo, and he did righteousness, justice to his entire people. And we hear about his representatives. We hear about Yoav ben Tzeruya, who's in charge of the army. We hear Yehoshaphat ben Achilud, who's the mazkir, his secretary, v'kutzolak ben Achitov, and Avimelech ben Eviatar, kohanim. And we hear Shav Shah, who is the Sofer, Benayo Ben Yehuda is in charge of the Urim V'Tumim, the Christ of the place, and Bnei David Arishonim Yad HaMelech. And we heard about the children, the earlier children of David HaMelech, were part of his cabinet, were with him. Why do we need to hear about this last section, which is parallel to the end of Perek Ches in Sefer Shmuel Beis? What's the point of this? So Rashi points out that David HaMelech at this point in time is transitioning out from being in charge of the army, because he used to be the head of the army under Shaul HaMelech, or at least a very higher up officer. He transfers that power to his representatives, and now is able to recess himself to deal with the internal issues of the people. So that's what's being described over here. So we need to hear about who he places in charge of his important nominations, so he's able to be this Oiseh Mishpat Utzdakah. In fact, the Chida takes us one step further to say that this ultimately is going to be David HaMelech's legacy. He decided that his legacy would not be this military hero, but rather be the fair judge of his people, which is why he needs these people to be in charge. The Chida takes one other possibility over here, where he says that, in fact, that this is also a testament to the fact that David HaMelech was a king al kol Yisrael, on all of Israel. He wasn't just a king over Yehuda, and he showed no favor to those from his tribe or disfavor to those who are not from his tribe. David HaMelech was really this idyllic leader who was able to treat everybody the same, and that's what's being described over here as well. In the meantime, have a wonderful and meaningful day.